And welcome back to the Eye on College Football podcast here on CBSSports.com. I am Chip Patterson, and you have tuned in to the Week 7 Rewind. Joining me, as he always does, from Chicago on this Sunday afternoon, Mr. Tom Fornelli. Tom, we had seven, count them, 7 ranked teams all lose on the same day. Three of them, two unranked teams. We've finally got a little bit of shakeup. Were you expecting this on this Saturday? I know that we've, and the second part of this question, we always have a couple of big upset days. Do you think this is going to be the first of many?
I wouldn't be surprised if it's going to happen again, because there's still too many undefeated teams remaining. And it's like we mentioned, I think, last week's episode where we were talking and we were wondering about so many undefeated teams and how it's going to come to the end of the year. We talked about how there's always that one weekend where everybody loses. And I think this was the first one of those weekends.
Yeah, this is, I think, especially in the BCS title contention, major developments include Stanford losing 27-21 on the road to Utah. We will get more into these sort of as we go. But number 7, Georgia losing to Missouri. Missouri jumps from number 25 to number 14 in the AP poll. Great performance against the Bulldogs, but lose James Franklin with a shoulder injury, likely for the rest of the season. And Tom, let's go ahead and start right there. It is tough for me, and I'm going to put together my top 30 that you'll be able to see in this post as soon as we get done recording, but it is tough for me to imagine that Missouri will be as good as this 6-0 start again without James Franklin, just because a healthy James Franklin was the whole reason for this Tigers offensive revolution.
Yeah, I think you have to feel that this is going to be the high point of the year for Missouri, because it's, I mean, you never know. We've seen stranger things happen where backups come in and play even better than the guy they're replacing. But I don't think that will be the case. I think Missouri's got off to as good of a start as you can. And the rest of the year, everything is just icing from this point.
Yeah, the fact that he was able to leave and we were able to get Matty Mock to come in there and continue to lead the Tigers to a win, that was great. Gary Pinkel, you know, this is very much a redemption game after he's been dragged through the mud. They are 6-0. They are eligible for the postseason. So regardless of what happens down the stretch, Missouri is bowling. I think that Gary Pinkel sort of got to show all of us that team that was so good near the end of the Big 12 with a healthy quarterback, which they didn't have in their first year of the SEC play, guess what? This Missouri team can still be pretty good.
Yeah, this is Missouri team that I think we were too quick to jump on the SEC is going to kill this team bandwagon last year because of those injuries. This is a team that I think it's not going to be, you know, an SEC title contender year in and year out, but it's going to be a team that's going to be making some noise during the season.
What do you make of Georgia right now? Because Aaron Murray runs out of gas, is not able to, and almost gets Georgia back into this game, but he just really has nothing as far at the skill positions. You know, J.J. Green certainly with a valiant effort coming in there, but we don't know what's going on with Todd Gurley's sprained ankle. It's tough to imagine that Georgia is going to be, like we said about Missouri, Georgia's just not going to be the same version of themselves the rest of the season. All of a sudden, this road trip to Auburn looks a little bit more difficult. They've still got to play Florida. Other than that, though, you get Appalachian State, Kentucky, then the season finale at Georgia Tech. Where are you looking at the Bulldogs here? Obviously, the loss to an SEC East opponent opens up that division race once again. Do you still have them as the front runner?
The good news for Georgia is that even though their national title hopes pretty much died on Saturday, they still kind of, you know, control their own destiny in the SEC East, because, like we talked about, I don't think Mizzou's going to be hanging on to that lead in first place, and they're still tied with South Carolina and Florida at 3-1 in the division. So I feel like if Georgia wins out, this is a team that could still be playing in Atlanta at the end of the year for SEC title. The bad news is I don't know that they'll be able to win out unless everybody miraculously heals.
Yeah, I don't think so either. So who do you give the edge to in the SEC East?
Oh, God. It's so tough because I can't give it to Missouri now because of a Franklin injury. And then Florida is just so Yeah, when you it's so hard to watch Florida play football sometimes. And South Carolina looked great against Arkansas this week, but South Carolina, you know, it's really the first time the Gamecocks have truly looked impressive this season. So I don't know. It's so hard to it's too hard to really call at this point. I think right now I would give the slight edge to South Carolina just because if they play like they did against Arkansas, okay.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's TBA. This is another reason Missouri's upset over Georgia of why this will be so much fun as we continue to watch these games and these conference races unfold. Obviously, until dethroned, we're talking about a bid in one game to play Alabama over there from the SEC West. But we got to move over to the Red River, where Texas just absolutely just sort of stomped on Oklahoma early in the first half. And then even, you know, Tom, it wasn't even Texas's necessarily most dominant performance. I mean, you still had fumbles, turnover on downs, interceptions. I mean, there were still plenty of opportunities for Oklahoma to get back in it. But with Halloween here, I think you or Jerry, somebody said in the campfire, but Blake Bell turned into a pumpkin. This is a regression of the Oklahoma offense. And good job, you know, credit to Texas's defense. Everyone thought that they were going to get gashed on the ground, and Oklahoma is just not really able to orchestrate any kind of offense. They got a rushing touchdown, but it was set up by incredible field position. You've got a lot of three and outs, a lot of six and outs. I mean, what do you make of this game? You were sort of our point man for CBSSports.com as far as the coverage. So I'll just turn it over to you. Texas, Oklahoma, what's the takeaway for each?
You know, the strangest thing for me from this game is I don't know if it would have made a difference, but it was the fact that Oklahoma did not use Blake Bell as a runner in this game. And I heard there was a quote after the game, the Oklahoma coaches essentially said that they didn't think Bell would be able to run the ball against this Texas defense. And I want to know what they saw from this Texas defense against running quarterbacks this season that made them think Blake Bell wouldn't be able to run the ball against them. But I don't know that that makes a difference in how this game plays out, because Oklahoma's defense couldn't stop Texas from running yesterday either. Both Jonathan Gray and Malcolm Brown went over 120 yards. So I'm not trying to take anything away from Texas's win, because they did pretty much not dominate, but they beat Oklahoma pretty darn good in that game. And it's weird because I think now we're at the point where everybody's confused, because we might have to actually start taking Texas seriously.
Yeah, that was a point that was made by someone that with Baylor and Texas playing on the last week of the regular season, what if that is the Big 12?
That game's a lot more interesting.
Yeah, a lot more interesting right now. I no idea really what to make of this. Oklahoma defense really needs to have a strong bounce back moving forward. And, you know, Texas, this is a good sign, unbelievable win for Mack Brown. Oklahoma State may be the winner in all of this. Jerry Palm talks about them, still has them projected to win the Big 12's BCS bid. And on the podcast last week, he basically said, with Oklahoma State's schedule, I just think that there's so much, you know, irregularity, or I guess you could say parity, among the Big 12. He just assumes that they're probably going to get the bid at 9-3 or whatever the record is.
Yeah, I get that, because, I mean, they do have the luck of getting Baylor and Oklahoma both at home this year to finish the year. But at the same time, I don't know what anybody has seen from Oklahoma State this year to make them think that this team is really, you know, how is it any better than anybody else in this conference?
Yeah. No, I agree with you. I think Baylor's still the Big 12 champ, but certainly Kansas State made them look a little bit beatable. But that was ahead.
For me, nothing's changed. You know, from the beginning of the year, I was saying I think the Big 12 champ will have two losses in conference, and nothing has changed for me on that point. I still think that's what's going to happen.
Yeah, you certainly are looking good there. That Baylor Kansas State game was grouping things into upsets that happened, upsets that didn't, or near scares. So let's knock out a big upset that did happen with Utah 27-21 over Stanford. At home, this is a big, big win for the Utah program, particularly with the Pac-12 success, not necessarily the best. You've got the change as far as bringing in Dennis Erickson, Brian Johnson as your co-offensive coordinators, Kyle Whittingham, big home win, rushing the field. I think the Utes cannot necessarily win the Pac-12 South, but because of their schedule and because of the way this team is built, they could screw up a lot of other teams' season.
Yeah, Utah is going to have a say in who wins that division. I mean, I still think we both agree that UCLA is the clear-cut, you know, favorite there, but Utah still gets games against Arizona State at home, and it still also plays USC on the road and Arizona on the road. So Utah's got a tough road to hoe to really think that it has a chance to win the division, particularly with two losses. But no, they're going to have a say in it.
Yeah, and David Shaw was giving credit. It was Utah's offensive line creating issues for that Stanford front seven that has been one of the nation's best. Stanford did not do a very good job. They had a lot of missed tackles on defense, even after they made adjustments. Because for the most part, Stanford, a team that I have often said I think is one of the best teams in the country at halftime adjustments, they did do a lot of the right things, and Travis Wilson and the Utah offense, which was really powered by a strong run game, James Poole, and then using short passes to guys like Drez Anderson, they were able to limit a lot of that, but a lot of missed tackles and just really could not get it going on offense. It was not a great game for Kevin Hogan. What's next for the Cardinal? I mean, I guess you just hope that you can beat Oregon, and therefore Oregon will have one loss, and you just move forward, because you've got Washington in the rear view. Is there any way that you think that Stanford could get back into the BCS title hunt?
I don't think Stanford's getting back in the national title hunt, no. But I think Jerry, in the campfire we were talking yesterday, had a very good comparison for Stanford this year. Was he compared them to the LSU teams we were used to seeing in recent years, where the defense and the special teams are all there, and it's going to keep them in most games, but the offense is just, it doesn't always show up.
Yeah.
And I think it's a very good comp to how Stanford has played this year. But no, they're not going to win a national title, but they do still, like Georgia, they still control their own destiny in the Pac-12 North, because they still have games against Oregon State and Oregon, who are the two undefeated teams remaining in that division. And while they've also got, you know, UCLA and USC, so it's not going to be easy for them to win out by any means. But they do still control their own destiny. They can get to the Rose Bowl. I don't think a loss against Utah compared to any other, like a one loss. If we're looking at a one loss team in the national title, I think the Utah loss is going to keep Stanford out, unless they destroy Oregon.
Yeah. You could have the situation where if Oregon continues to go on their tear, but Stanford beats, you know, because they'll get UCLA. They've got a lot of like big games left respectable opponents.
Games left, yeah.
Yeah, they've got a lot left. They could creep back into the Rose Bowl if Oregon gets a BCS title bid or some scenario like that.
Yeah, oh no, for sure. I think in Palm's projection, that's exactly what he has. He has Stanford versus Ohio State in the Rose Bowl right now, because he's got Alabama and Oregon in the national title game.
All right, we've got two more upsets that did happen, though. The first one, Wisconsin over Northwestern. Wisconsin, favored by double digits, just ran right over Northwestern. Northwestern just didn't really have anything left in the tank offensively. And then we've got Michigan and Penn State. Michigan, only a slight favorite on the road at Happy Valley, four overtimes. Let's start there, Tom. I am ready to sell all of my Michigan stock. Is there any reason why I should not?
It's not a very good team, no. But I just got into like a debate with people on Twitter before we started doing this about how I've seen so many people that are like, Michigan doesn't deserve to be ranked 24th or whatever in the coaches poll. And this is a 5-1 team that its only loss came in the road in four overtimes. How is that not deserving of a 24th ranking? But I digress. I get it, because, yeah, you see the Akron game, you see the UConn game, and then you see the way that they lost this game at the end. And I don't know if it's the running game is still completely non-existent. Devin Gardner is still a little bit too fast and free with the football, and it's the same stories I've been saying. If this team, you know, doesn't find a running game and doesn't take care of the ball, it's going to lose. And then when you combine that with Brady Hoke's less than brave decision-making at the end of that game yesterday. it's, you know, this is, it caught up to them. And this is a team that I don't think you should abandon all hope yet. I mean, I've heard people talking about how Brady Hoke's in the same spot that Rich Rod was a few years ago. And I guess win-loss wise they are, but I don't know if I abandoned ship just yet, but I don't think this team is winning a Big Ten title.
Do you think they're winning a division? Because Michigan State looks a lot better right now. Jeremy Langford running the ball well. I mean, Indiana's defense is one thing, but 238 rushing yards. Life has gotten better on Connor Cook. They were 10 for 14 on third down in that winning the old brass spittoon. I'm up on the Spartans. I'm not ready to necessarily say that they are the front runner in that division, but I'm interested to see that moving forward.
I'm almost ready. It's funny because if you think about where we were in the first few weeks of the year and just with how terrible Michigan State looked and how terrible Nebraska was looking defensively, and now we sit here, and from what I've seen in the last few weeks, I think Nebraska and Michigan State are the two favorites in the Legends division. I think things have completely turned around for the exact same reasons you're saying, because Michigan State's defense has been great all along, and they're finally figuring things out on offense. And whereas Nebraska, even without Taylor Martinez the last few weeks, has looked very good in offense. The defense has improved, and yes, it's against Illinois and Purdue, but still, they were giving up tons of yards and points to bad teams before, so we shouldn't discount them not giving up points to bad teams now. And when you look, we've talked about Michigan's problems, and then Northwestern yesterday, that team quit.
241 yards of offense. Wisconsin just really turned loose the pass rush. Big day for Borland, talented All-American candidate, linebacker for the Badgers. Is Vennerick Mark healthy? I didn't get to see the play. I only saw the report.
He left early with what was called a lower leg injury, or lower body injury. It's like a hockey game, you know, how they were describing the injury. So I don't know for certain what the severity of the injury is, but I mean, he didn't come back in. But what bothered me more than anything in that game was because like we mentioned, I thought in the picks podcast, I thought I was terrified of the prospect that Wisconsin could just run them over, which is what happened. But what I did not expect was, like I said, that Northwestern team pretty much quit in that game yesterday. And I was shocked to see that, to be quite frankly with you. It's like when you think of Pat Fitzgerald's Northwestern teams, you think even when they're, you know, even when they were bad before he got it completely turned around, this was a team that was still fighting, and they weren't fighting yesterday. So I can't buy Northwestern coming back. They're already 0-2 in the Big Ten, so I can't pick them as a team that's capable of winning that division. I really do think it's between Michigan State and Nebraska at this point.
Wow. All right, so those were the upsets of ranked teams that did happen. Now we've got some near upsets that didn't, and we're going to start with Oregon and Washington. Oregon goes right into the mouth of the beast and lays a thorough beating. And it's not even – I don't want to make it seem like they blew Washington out of the water, but this was just one of those games where every bit of life – that Keith Price and Washington, every time that they were able to find the end zone and generate a little bit of excitement in Husky Stadium for this giant game with game day in town, and it was the game of the week. I mean, Marcus Mariota just sits there and takes all of your hope away. He leads another touchdown drive. I mean, it is the most deflating, complete sort of victory that I've seen maybe this season. I don't know. Very, very impressed with the Ducks right now. Where are you at?
Yeah, I agree. That was the kind of game you want to see from a national title contender because they didn't just, you know, beat down Washington or anything. Washington played very well. It was just, like you said, any time Washington showed any threat, Oregon snuffed it really quickly. They just took the life right out of it. Anytime Washington thought it had a chance. And that's, you know, that's what Alabama's always done. And it's what Oregon is doing this year. And because this was the first real test. Oregon's played some tough teams, but going on the road against Washington, and I don't care if they've, you know, won 10 straight against this team, playing in Husky Stadium isn't easy for anybody, especially against this Washington team that's been very good and nearly beat Stanford last week. So that's a very impressive thing. And I don't know if, aside from Stanford, and even at this point, so the way Stanford's played, I'm not exactly optimistic about their chances. I don't know if there's anything in the way of, like, between Oregon and the national title game right now.
You know what really impressed me? Non-Marcus Mariota Oregon offense division in this game?
The defense?
Well, the defensive line specifically, yeah. Guys like Hart and Tony Washington, and they sat there. And Bishop Sankey, he got his yards. He was going to get his in this game. But they created
a very good player.
They created a lot of pressure on Keith Price. This was Keith Price's worst game of the season, easily. Mm-hmm. They did a good job of sort of plugging up the holes in the first half. It took a while for Sankey to get loose. And that sort of – that allowed Oregon's offense to get out there, you know, 21-7 at half. And then in the third quarter, it's just sort of the back and forth. And by the time the fourth quarter came, it just seemed like Washington didn't have anything left. I mean, it was just, like you were saying, a Alabama-style wear you down to just dust.
Yeah, and it's a testament to Oregon's offense, and that Oregon's offense is always so good that we tend to overlook that its defense isn't exactly bad.
I think that Texas A&M's defense might be bad, though.
Yes.
Texas A&M survives 41-38 thanks to a game-winning field goal as time expired. The Aggies faced a 38-31 deficit in the middle of the fourth quarter. Johnny Manziel just puts together an awesome drive to score a touchdown that tied the game, then does the exact same thing to lead the Aggies right down. Josh Lambeau, former professional soccer player, goalkeeper 2 years ago, noted goalkeeper, kicks the game winner and gets the game ball. Awesome game for Johnny Manziel. Still a lot of concerns about this Texas A&M defense.
Yeah, I actually had written down in my notes, as you know, most people talk about Johnny Manziel as their favorite thing about Texas A&M. My favorite thing about Texas A&M is its defense's determination to keep every opponent in the game, because that just makes Manziel more exciting. But no, I mean, Manziel was doing Manziel things, and there was that moment where I think the entire country gasped because he grabbed his knee after that one run. But
yes, absolutely.
No, Texas A&M, this is one of the more fun teams to watch, just because you feel like every game, every week, no matter who they're playing, it's going to come down to a couple plays in the fourth quarter. And I think that's why I love Texas A&M more than for the most anyway.
Johnny Manziel, just love. And the thing you heard from all the players when you go back and you look at all the quotes from postgame, everyone else on that Texas A&M team just talked about the confidence, and you know, his teammates toss around the same words that the media that gush over Johnny Manziel. They say his players call him a gamer, and they say, you know, we never thought that we weren't going to be able to make a play. And that was the same thing that they said after that Alabama game. I mean, and that is, if we want to just, you know, brush jokes and extraneous storylines to the side, Johnny Manziel is a quarterback who inspires a lot of confidence in the rest of his team, because that everybody on that Texas A&M sideline believes that if Johnny Manziel has the ball in his hands, then the Texas A&M might be able to find the end zone.
Yeah, and that's an awesome thing to have with your team and your quarterback.
That's awesome. LSU just, you know, we were anticipating that this might be a rock fight, and every great job by Florida's defense, but unfortunately LSU's D gets a little bit of a bounce back. Florida loses Matt Jones to an injury in the middle of the game, but Florida's offense really, really, really struggling right now. Mm-hmm. Are you looking at this as a encouraging sign for LSU's defense, particularly as they move into the back half of their schedule, or do you think that this is a more of an indication of Florida's offensive woes?
I thought this was old school SEC football, just like Grandma used to make.
That's what you projected.
Yeah. No, I'm not exactly. I mean, it's good to see LSU's defense played well, but I wouldn't take what they did against this Florida offense and proclaim things fixed.
Right.
I mean, they're still, if they're facing an Aaron Murray type quarterback, or you know, one of
AJ McCarron here in a little bit.
Yeah, and then Manziel still down the line as well. So I still have concerns about this defense, but I mean, it was a good win. It was the kind of win you need to get, you know, to get where LSU wants to go. And it's impressive, although I wouldn't take anything from this performance and say, oh, right, no problems there.
Yeah. And for Florida, got to get – there is an opportunity now with Georgia getting another conference loss for Florida to be – if they can generate, just sort of get something rolling on offense, then they should be able to get back into this SEC East race. This is a very winnable division right now.
Yeah, this is – I mean, They've got Missouri next week, who's not going to have Franklin. They've got Georgia the week after that in the cocktail party, which is, you know, lost everybody on offense. And then, you know, you get Vandy, and the tough test is going to be the road game against South Carolina. I think at this point that's the game that's going to decide the SEC East on November 16th. You agree or disagree?
Oh, no. I agree. No, absolutely. I was just thinking, yeah. I was trying to race through my head. I remember what bothered me so much, and I had it in my notes. It was Florida's offensive line. They were just – I don't think LSU has gotten that much pressure on a quarterback since the 2012 regular season when they had those sick defensive ends. I mean, this was not a good showing for the offensive line, and that's a great indicator of what's going wrong for the offense as a whole.
Yeah, no, it's problematic.
So what did you make of Baylor's 35-25 escape from the Little Apple, Manhattan, Kansas? I haven't gotten a chance to run back this one as much, so I will hand over the reins to you.
My biggest takeaway was that Jerry's going to have to buy me a six-pack next summer.
When Baylor loses?
Yeah, because, I mean, Baylor's offense, we've all been fawning over it, and for good reason, because it's been magnificent. But they've done it against the schedule that Jeff Sagarin currently ranks as like the 109th or something best, you know, strength of schedule in the country. So we shouldn't have taken it. And they ran into a team that Bill Snyder knows the formula of how to stop these teams. We've seen him do it millions of times. Just control the ball and keep that offense off the field. And probably the best team in the Big 12, but as we've said many times, I don't think being the best team in the Big 12 is being a national title contender. I think it's a team that's going to finish 10-2. And I still think that Baylor, especially, I think yesterday's game just convinced me that Baylor's offense is going to trip up and somebody's going to catch them at some point.
That trip to Oklahoma State, if we want to just make a incredibly irresponsible snap judgment based on Baylor's defense and the performance against mobile quarterbacks, they've got to go face J.W. Walsh in Bedlam.
Mm-hmm.
That could be bad.
Yeah, that's...
Yeah, no, never mind. I take that back. Let's erase that, because Oklahoma State plays at a breakneck pace, too. So they actually match that. Oklahoma State doesn't know how to play ball control.
Well, here's the thing. The first game on Baylor's schedule that concerns me, even after yesterday, is Oklahoma in two weeks, because it's on a Thursday, so it's on the short week. And if Oklahoma just decides to actually use Blake Bell as the battering ram, give the ball to Millard and Damian Williams, that's an offense that could keep Baylor's offense off the field. And I Oklahoma's defense, I have a lot of concerns, you know, because I think losing Corey Nelson showed yesterday. I think we learned how important Corey Nelson was to that defense. But I still think the Sooners can get things figured out a little bit better before that. So I think Oklahoma's right now is the first game I look at on Baylor's schedule where I say that could be the loss.
Clemson almost got caught looking ahead at home as Boston College came in, and they took a 7-3 halftime lead, really shutting down Clemson in the first half. They fumbled the ball about four times. They thankfully only lost it twice. They just could not get anything going offensively. This is Clemson's defense that bails them out. Andre Williams enters the game as the nation's leading rusher, and he is held at 2.9 yards per carry in this game. And the fact that Clemson's defense had to bail them out. Now, Tom,
you're scared?
I might be looking through some ACC tinted glasses, but is it good? We know that the offense can perform, and they have their toughest challenge. You'd like for them to be clicking on all gears heading into Florida State this coming Saturday. But the defense really seemed to bail the Tigers out of this game. And for a Clemson defense that has spoken often this year about trying to reverse their reputation, which has sort of been the lasting image of Clemson's defense is West Virginia hanging 70 on them in the Orange Bowl. And so I think that they desperately want respect. You've got improved plays from guys like Vic Beasley, linebacker Stephon Anthony. Maybe it's good. I don't know. It's also very scary. Florida State had the week off, and they got to see Clemson's offense completely shut down by Boston College. Well coached by Don Brown, by the way, but still Boston College.
Yeah, no, I don't think it's a bad thing that the defense played well. I think considering Clemson's history on defense, I don't care who you're playing. Anytime the defense plays well, that's a good thing going forward because it builds confidence, if nothing else, in the players. But I think Clemson, like, it was bad because, like you said, Florida State had the week off, so they got to sit at home and watch Clemson do this. But I think for the most part, as far as rankings are concerned, if you're Clemson, this was the best week to struggle in this game because – I mean, while yesterday morning going on, we had the Missouri-Georgia game going on and the Texas-Oklahoma game going on while this game was being played. Just being on Twitter and looking, I didn't, you know, Clemson was, like you said, they're losing 7-3 at halftime, or they were winning 7-3 at halftime. And I hadn't heard a word about it until halftime.
Oh, no,
nobody was paying any attention to this game.
They were losing 7-3 at halftime, and they hit.
Oh, I'm sorry, you're right.
They hit a field goal as time expired in the second quarter in order to get those 3 points. And Dabo Sweeney said,
"I didn't hear about it until halftime. Like nobody, I didn't see anybody tweet about it or anything. It's like I saw like halftime score, like from some like standard account from like the Clemson standard account. You know, Boston College 7, Clemson 3. And I'm like, wait, you know, record scratch. Wait a minute, what?
Offensive line struggled a little bit in this game, and that is very concerning considering what's going to be coming from the defensive line at Florida State. Do you have any early edge on Clemson, Florida State before we move on to their in-state rivals, the Cox?
I understand it, but I saw that this morning that Florida State's actually opened up as like a 2.5-point favorite. And I think Clemson getting points at home in this matchup, I get the line, but at the same time, that looks a little enticing to me.
I have no idea which way this is going to go. I hope and I think it's going to be a one-score game, but there's a lot we got to learn about both
these
teams.
It's two teams that traditionally fall apart in these big games.
Well, last year their game was tremendous.
Yeah. But my point is, it's like somebody generally, one of these teams is known, its reputation is for choking at these moments. So it's like they're either like they're going to have a game like last year or they're both going to choke. So it's like they're going to be trying to hand the game to the other team. So it's impossible to really know which way it's going to go.
I thought that South Carolina was going to choke on the road at Arkansas. And
you were wrong.
I was so wrong. Things are okay in Columbia after 2 weeks of lots of media hysteria over the most talked about ribs since a barbecue festival. Like this is a huge FU from South Carolina to everybody else. Mike Davis running angry, and man, he is fun to watch when he runs like that. Clowney gets in there, plays, looks pretty active. South Carolina wins 52-7. Defense does not allow anything beyond one opening drive that Arkansas was able to get to a touchdown. Then it was just nothing after that. Really impressive performance by the Gamecocks defense. We've looking at the rest of South Carolina's schedule. We just said wide open SEC East. Where do you have the Gamecocks at the end of this season overall?
Like I said, I think they're my slight favorite right now. I mean, they got their next two games are on the road, but it's Tennessee and a Missouri team that has lost Chase Franklin, so it's not the toughest road tests out there. And then they get their final four games of the year at home, which is a pretty nice, you know, that's pretty nice to have. So I think this is a team that's certainly going to be in the top 10 once the season's over, and I give it the edge in the SEC East at the moment, but in this division, the way these teams have played, that changes every couple hours, not just every couple of weeks. So right now, they're my favorite. Could change depending on how Clowney feels tomorrow.
Yeah. And Alabama, Alabama did Alabama things. They win 48-7 at Kentucky, and
I just want to say, you know, Kentucky running back JoJo Kemp said this week that Kentucky was going to put some points on the board against Alabama.
Hey,
and they did, so he didn't lie.
If you need stock advice, JoJo Kemp's your man. He can see the future.
Alabama was going to get scored on, and Alabama got scored on once. So, bam, better than Ole Miss.
So quickly running down, we got Virginia Tech. Just defense continues to be monstrous. I like that. I know that Miami's up to number 10 in the polls. I think I might still like the Hokies since both teams still have to play Florida State. But did you get a chance to watch much of that game?
No, But I agree with you. Just based on from what I've seen most of the year, I would still give Virginia Tech a slight edge over Miami, but a slight edge.
UCLA tops Cal. Texas Tech with Davis Webb in the game. Baker Mayfield still sidelined, is able to pull together enough to get one last touchdown in a tit-for-tat match against Iowa State. Louisville tops Rutgers. What else stood out to you on this wonderful Saturday?
There are a couple individual performances, but other than that, I mean...
Like what?
I think with Michigan State, their offense, running back Jeremy Langford had 120 total yards and 4 touchdowns, and I think that's a big reason, and he could be a big part of the Spartans actually finding an offense. I love me some Melvin Gordon. He had 172 yards and touchdown against Northwestern, and he also made his way into my Heisman top 5.
So I feel like
there needs to be at least one running back in there, doesn't there?
Yeah, I was too quarterback heavy with mine.
Well, I almost had this quarterback in there because he's continued to play amazingly. Sean Mannion, Oregon State, threw for another 493 yards and 4 touchdowns last night. So he's having a magnificent season, and you don't hear a darn thing about him because people just gave up on Oregon State after that Eastern Washington loss. Then also, I just loved this stat line going through. Baylor's Tevin Reese, 5 catches, 184 yards, 2 touchdowns. he was averaging, about 40 or 35 yards a catch.
Was there a 70-yard touchdown in there? I know those ones. Yeah, okay, that's right. Yeah. That's always because, like, for example, in Gordon had a 71-yard touchdown run.
No, he was down at the 1. He had the 71-yard run, but he got taken down at the 1.
Oh, that's right. And then White put in 101 yards too, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Man, Wisconsin's pretty good.
Yeah, I think it's right. They're the second best team in the Big Ten. And if it wasn't for the officials, at the end of that Arizona State game, it's a 5-1 Wisconsin team who's probably ranked in the top 15, closer to the top 10 at this point.
Yeah, absolutely. This week, we are absolutely loaded. Tom will join me twice this week. I don't know if you knew this, Tom. We're going to be doing a mid-season awards podcast. This week we'll be rolling out lots of different content, both our mid-season All-Americans, our Offensive Player of the Year, Defensive Player of the Year, Coach of the Year, sort of all the superlatives. We've got a lot of great content from Dennis Dodd, Bruce Feldman, Tony Barnhart, Jeremy Fowler, all the senior writers. So be sure, if you are not already, to subscribe. You'll get the Midseason Awards podcast. You'll get a Midseason Doddcast, including his discussion of the Midseason Coach of the Year. I will not tell you where he's leaning, but he's got I'm not going to ruin it. And then
it's Lane Kiffin.
And it's Lane Kiffin. And then, of course, at the end of the week, Tom, Jerry, and I will do the Expert Picks podcast. For Tom Fornelli, I'm Chip Patterson. Thanks so much for listening.